A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and I have to say, I actually laughed out loud reading it. He wants the full field manual for vetting a rental like an intelligence operation. Thermal cameras, decoy applicants, the works. And he specifically asked that we bring Hilbert out from behind the mixing board to run point on this.
Which is why, for what I believe is the first time in 200 episodes, we actually dragged Hilbert Flumingtop out from behind the mixing desk and put him in front of a microphone. Hilbert, welcome to the hot seat.
I'm only doing this because the prompt was too good to let you two fumble it. You spend years watching people walk into apartment viewings like they're touring a museum, touching the countertops, nodding at the natural light, completely oblivious to the fact that they're being professionally lied to for 20 minutes. It's maddening.
Hilbert, I have to say, I've been mentally compiling a field manual for apartment viewings for years. This is basically my love language.
Then you'll appreciate the framework. Most renters treat a viewing like a first date. They want the apartment to like them. That's backwards. You're not there to be chosen. You're there to gather intelligence. The broker is not your friend. The current tenant, if present, is not your friend. The freshly baked cookies on the counter are a chemical warfare agent designed to make you ignore the water damage behind the fridge.
Wait, the cookies thing, is that real?
It's absolutely real. Baking cookies or brewing coffee before viewing is one of the oldest tricks in the book. It triggers olfactory nostalgia, makes the place feel homey, and masks mildew. If you walk into an apartment and it smells like a bakery, your threat level should go to orange.
The olfactory camouflage is well documented. There's a whole body of research on scent marketing in real estate. Vanilla, cinnamon, fresh bread. But the rental market has its own specific playbook. Brokers will run a dehumidifier for 3 days before a viewing to dry out a chronically damp unit, then unplug it an hour before you arrive, so you don't hear it running.
Which is why step one of my protocol is the pre-arrival reconnaissance. You don't show up exactly on time. You arrive 15 minutes early, and you sit in your car or across the street and you watch. Who's coming and going from the building? Are there moving trucks? Is there a guy on the third floor who appears to be running a small engine repair business out of his unit? These are things you want to know.
I actually do this already. I maintain a fake LinkedIn profile for apartment hunting.
Herman has a fully fleshed out LinkedIn presence as a mid-level compliance officer at a regional bank. Headshot's a stock photo of a man named Gerald.
The commitment to the bit is genuinely unsettling.
It's not a bit. Gerald has 17 connections and a recommendation from someone who doesn't exist. And here's why. When I'm interested in a building, I look up the property manager on LinkedIn before the viewing. I want to see how long they've been in the role, whether they joke companies every 8 months, whether they've got the 1,000-yard stare of someone who's been dealing with sewage backups since the Obama administration. That's data.
That's exactly the mindset. Pre-arrival, you're also checking the building's permit history. Most cities have this online now. You want to see if there's been unpermitted work, if the electrical was redone by someone's cousin, if there are open code violations. None of this is hard to find, but almost nobody does it.
What about the decoy applicant thing? Because the prompts specifically mention bringing a decoy.
So here's the scenario. You're viewing an apartment. The broker is walking you through, doing the patter. You need to see things the broker doesn't want you to see, and you can't do that if they're watching you the whole time. So you bring a decoy.
A friend who pretends to be your very interested, very distractible co-applicant.
Not pretends to be. The decoy's job is to monopolize the broker. While the broker is showing the decoy the walk-in closet or the balcony, you are on your hands and knees checking the baseboards for signs of pest activity. The decoy asks follow-up questions. The decoy wants to see the storage locker again. The decoy is fascinated by the water heater. Meanwhile, you're running a pocket moisture meter along the wall behind the couch.
I love this. The decoy as a tactical asset. But let me push on something. You mentioned a moisture meter. Are you suggesting people actually bring one?
I'm suggesting you bring a thermal camera attachment for your phone. They're about $200. You can get one that plugs into the charging port. Walk through the apartment, and you'll see cold spots that indicate missing insulation. You'll see hot spots behind walls that could be electrical issues. You'll see moisture intrusion as temperature differentials. It takes 30 seconds, and it reveals things the broker does not know about, or does know about, and has staged furniture in front of.
We should be clear here. There's a line between due diligence and showing up to a rental viewing looking like a home inspector from a ghost hunting show.
The line is whether you care about living in a mold-infested box for the next 12 months. Thermal cameras aren't spy gear, they're consumer electronics. You can buy one at a hardware store. The only reason it feels extreme is that most renters have been conditioned to treat a viewing as a courtesy tour rather than what it actually is. A 15-minute window to assess whether you're about to sign a contract worth tens of thousands of dollars.
He's not wrong about the stakes. If you're signing a one-year lease at $2,000 a month, that's a $24,000 decision you're making in the time it takes to watch a sitcom.
All right, you've sold me on the thermal camera. What am I looking for?
One, cold spots on exterior walls that's missing or settled insulation, which means your heating bill is going to be obscene. Two, temperature anomalies around windows and doors, that's air leakage. Three, and this is the big one, cold patches on ceilings or lower walls that could indicate moisture. Water evaporates, evaporation cools, the camera sees it. If you see a suspiciously cool area under a freshly painted patch of ceiling, you're looking at a leak that's been cosmetically covered.
The freshly painted single wall or single ceiling section is the rental equivalent of a car with mismatched body panels. It's not subtle once you know to look for it.
Which brings me to the marble test. You carry a marble. You set it on the floor in the middle of each room. If it rolls, the floor isn't level. A slight slope in an older building is normal. A marble that accelerates like it's fleeing a crime scene means there's a foundation issue or the floor joists are compromised. Either way, your furniture is going to be on a permanent tilt, and you'll feel it every time you walk across the room.
The marble test is a classic. I've done it. It's also a fantastic way to make a broker visibly uncomfortable, which is itself useful data. If they get nervous when you pull out a marble, they know something about the floor.
How they react to any of this is intelligence. If you ask about water pressure, and they smoothly redirect to the new appliances, that's a tell. If you ask to see the electrical panel, and they say they don't have access to it right now, that's a bigger tell.
Speaking of water pressure, the 5-minute plumbing stress test, here's what you do. You turn on the shower, you turn on the bathroom sink, you turn on the kitchen sink. All at once, full blast, you let them run, then you flush the toilet.
You're going to flood the apartment.
If flushing the toilet while the taps are running floods the apartment, you didn't want to live there anyway. What you're testing is whether the plumbing can handle simultaneous demand. In an old building with galvanized pipes, you'll see the shower pressure drop to a trickle the moment someone flushes. That's your life every morning. You're also checking drainage. If the water backs up in the shower pan, there's a blockage somewhere in the stack, and that's not getting fixed before you move in.
I do a variant of this where I run the shower for a full 3 minutes and watch the water temperature. If it fluctuates wildly, the building's hot water system is undersized or there's a cross connection somewhere. But Hilbert's simultaneous demand test is smarter because it stress tests the whole system at once.
The thing about the plumbing stress test is that it's the one test that's hard to explain away if the broker catches you doing it. With the marble, you can say it fell out of your pocket. With the thermal camera, you can say you're taking artistic photos. But standing in a bathroom with every tap running and the toilet flushing, that's a statement.
Let it be a statement. You're about to give this person a substantial portion of your income for a year. They can handle you running the water for 5 minutes. If they can't, that's a red flag on its own.
All right, let's talk about the broker themselves. Because the prompt mentioned reading body language, and this is an area where I think people undertrain themselves. What are we looking for?
The broker is a professional persuader. They do this multiple times a day. Most of them are not technically lying, they're strategically omitting. Your job is to identify the omissions. First thing, watch their eyes when you ask a direct question. If you ask, when was the last time the HVIC was serviced, and their eyes flick to the ceiling or to the left, and I mean a quick, involuntary micro-expression, they're accessing memory that they're about to creatively reinterpret.
The leftward glance is the constructing memory tell, right? As opposed to rightward, which is accessing actual memory?
For most right-handed people, yes. It's not universal, but it's a useful heuristic. More reliable is the cluster. If they break eye contact, touch their face, and give you an answer that's slightly too specific. The HVIC was serviced in March of 2024, actually. They're overcompensating. Honest answers tend to be vaguer. I'd have to check the records is more trustworthy than an unsolicited date.
The pacing is another one. If a broker is walking you through the apartment unusually fast, they're managing your dwell time. They want you through the problem areas before you can focus. A broker who lingers in the living room but practically sprints through the bathroom is telling you where the problems are.
And the inverse, if they park you in front of the one good feature and keep you there, they're selling the sizzle. The view, the exposed brick, the new countertops. The longer you're looking at the thing they want you to see, the less time you have for the things they don't.
You're saying I should actively resist the tour's pacing, linger where they want to move through where they want to linger.
If the broker says, and here's the second bedroom, and starts walking toward the living room, you stay in the second bedroom. You open the closet. You check the window locks. You take your time. You're not being rude, you're being thorough. The broker's schedule is not your problem.
One thing I've noticed, and I'm curious if you've seen this, Hilbert, is the phantom tenant. The broker says something like, the current tenant is very particular about cleanliness, or the tenant works nights, so we can't disturb them. But there is no tenant. The unit is vacant, and the broker is using the imaginary tenant as a shield against deeper inspection.
The phantom tenant is a classic. It's a way to keep you out of certain areas, or to explain away why the place isn't available for immediate move-in. If you hear the tenant is sleeping during a 2 p.m. viewing, you're being managed.
What's the counter?
You ask to schedule a follow-up viewing at a different time of day. If the tenant works nights, surely a morning viewing works. If the broker hedges, the tenant doesn't exist, and you're dealing with someone who's comfortable lying to your face. That's useful information about who you'd be renting from.
Let's talk about sound. This is my personal obsession. Apartments are sold on visuals, but they're lived in through sound. The upstairs neighbor who apparently practices river dance at 5 a.m. The garbage truck that arrives at 4:15. The HVIC unit that sounds like a helicopter spooling up.
The sound test is non-negotiable. At some point during the viewing, you stop talking. You ask everyone to be quiet for 60 seconds. You close your eyes. And you listen. You're listening for traffic noise, for neighbor noise through the walls, for mechanical systems, for the hum of a transformer outside the window, for the frequency of planes overhead if you're under a flight path.
60 seconds of silence in a viewing with a broker and a decoy is an eternity. It's also the most valuable 60 seconds of the entire visit.
I'd add, do the sound test with the windows open and with them closed. Some apartments are fine with double-pane windows shut and unlivable the moment you want fresh air.
Also, if the apartment has radiators, ask when the heating season starts and ends, then knock on the radiator pipes. If they clang, you're going to hear that clang every time the heat cycles on. In some buildings, it sounds like someone's hitting the pipes with a wrench. The broker will tell you you get used to it. You don't.
All right, we've covered thermal cameras, marbles, plumbing stress tests, decoys, broker body language, and sound. What about the electrical system? That's the one area where I feel completely out of my depth.
Electrical is easier to assess than people think. First, find the panel. If the broker can't or won't show you the electrical panel, walk away. If they show it to you, look at the breakers. Are they labeled? A legible scrawl on a piece of masking tape from 1998 tells you the landlord doesn't maintain the electrical. Look for double-tapped breakers. Two wires under one screw, which is a code violation and a fire hazard. If the panel is a Federal Pacific or Zinsco brand, those panels have known failure rates and should have been replaced decades ago.
The Federal Pacific thing is huge. Those panels were installed in millions of homes from the 50s through the 80s, and they fail to trip under overload conditions at something like a 60% rate. They just sit there while the wires melt.
Landlords almost never replace them proactively because it's a few thousand dollars and it's behind a door nobody opens.
I'm checking the panel for brand, labeling, and double taps. What about the outlets themselves?
Bring an outlet tester. They're $10. It's a little plug with three lights that tells you if the outlet is wired correctly, if it's grounded, if the polarity is reversed. Test one outlet in each room. If multiple outlets are ungrounded or miswired, the electrical hasn't been touched since the Nixon administration. Also, count the outlets in each room. A bedroom with one outlet is a century-old design that was never updated.
I'd extend that to network infrastructure. Look for where the coax or fiber enters the unit. If there's only one cable outlet and it's in the living room, your home office is going to be running on Wi-Fi and prayer. And if the building is wired for only one ISP, you need to know that before you sign. Some buildings have exclusivity agreements. You don't want to discover that your only option is a provider with one-star reviews and a data cap.
The number of things we're recommending people bring to a viewing is starting to feel like a heist movie. Thermal camera, marble, outlet tester, moisture meter, decoy applicant with a fake LinkedIn profile.
You don't need all of it on the first viewing. The first viewing is triage. You're eliminating the obvious disasters. The second viewing, and you should always do a second viewing, is where you bring the kit and do the deep inspection. Ideally at a different time of day, so you see the light and the noise profile under different conditions.
Different day of the week, too. That quiet Tuesday afternoon apartment might be directly above a bar that has live music Thursday through Saturday.
The weekend versus weekday split is real. I once viewed an apartment on the Sunday morning that seemed perfect. Came back on a Wednesday evening and discovered the building next door was a restaurant whose kitchen exhaust vented directly toward the bedroom window. The smell of fryer oil was so thick you could almost see it.
That's exactly the kind of thing you catch on a second viewing at a different time. Which brings me to something I think gets overlooked. The building's trash situation. Find the trash room or the dumpsters. Are they overflowing? Is there a smell? Are there signs of pest activity? The trash area is the building's honest self. Nobody stages the trash room.
The trash room is the building's honest self. That's going on a plaque somewhere.
It's true, though. You can learn more about a building from its garbage situation than from the lobby.
While we're on the building level stuff, talk to a neighbor, not the one the broker introduces you to. Find someone who's coming in with groceries or checking their mail. Say you're thinking about renting here and ask what they wish they'd known before they moved in. People love to talk about what's wrong with their building. You'll hear about the elevator that's been broken for 6 months, the property manager who never returns calls, the package theft problem, the heating that doesn't come on until November, regardless of the temperature.
The neighbor interview is the single highest yield intelligence gathering technique, and almost nobody does it. It takes 90 seconds, and you get the unvarnished truth from someone with no skin in the game.
I'll admit, I've never done the neighbor interview. It feels intrusive.
It's not intrusive. It's being a functioning member of a community you're about to join. If someone knocked on my door and asked about the building before signing a lease, I'd respect it.
All right, let's get into the really paranoid stuff. The prompt mentioned fake LinkedIn profiles to keep brokers honest. Herman, you've already admitted to Gerald. What's the operational use here?
The idea is that before a viewing, you research the broker. But the broker is also researching you. If they Google your name and find a LinkedIn profile that suggests you're a mid-level compliance officer at a regional bank, they're going to make certain assumptions. You're stable, you're employed, you're not going to cause trouble, but you're also the kind of person who reads contracts carefully and notices when things are amiss. It sets a tone.
It's about managing the information asymmetry. The broker has all the information about the property. You have almost none. Anything you can do to signal that you're not an easy mark shifts the dynamic. If they think you're the type of person who notices details, they're less likely to try the obvious omissions.
I use a rating system for viewings. Noise, light, water pressure, and broker honesty. Each gets a score out of 10. If the broker honesty score is below 6, I don't care how good the apartment is. I'm not renting from someone I can't trust.
That's the right instinct. The broker is the proxy for the landlord. If the broker is evasive or dishonest, the landlord is probably worse, because the landlord is the one who trained the broker or hired the broker or simply doesn't care what the broker does.
What about the actual lease? We spent all this time on the viewing, but the contract is where the real traps are.
Read every word. I know that sounds obvious, but people don't do it. Look for the renewal clause. Does it auto-renew? And at what increase? Look for the maintenance responsibility. Who pays for what? In some leases, the tenant is responsible for minor repairs, and minor is defined in ways that can include things like replacing a garbage disposal. Look for the subletting clause. Look for the pet policy and whether it can change mid-lease.
The renewal increase is the big one. Some leases have a clause that says the rent increases by a market rate at renewal, with market rate determined by the landlord. That's not a renewal clause, that's a blank check.
If something in the lease is ambiguous, get it clarified in writing. Verbal assurances are worth the paper they're printed on.
Which is none. Verbal assurances are worth none paper.
Herman's been waiting to use that line.
It was worth it.
One last thing on the lease. Check if there's a clause about the landlord's right to enter the unit. Some leases give the landlord essentially unlimited access with minimal notice. That's not just an annoyance. It's a privacy issue that'll wear on you every day.
All right, we've covered the viewing. The broker, the building, the lease. I want to circle back to something you mentioned in passing, Hilbert. The current tenant. If the current tenant is present during the viewing, that's a goldmine. What are we asking them?
You're asking them the questions the broker doesn't want you to ask. How responsive is the landlord when something breaks? How much did the rent increase at the last renewal? What are the utility bills actually like in winter and summer? Are there pest issues? Why are you moving out?
That last one, why are you moving, is the most important question and also the one where you're most likely to get a polite fiction. Nobody's going to say, because the upstairs neighbor is a nightmare and the landlord won't do anything. But you watch their face when they answer. A hesitation, a too careful response, a glance at the broker that tells you what the words don't.
If the tenant isn't present, ask the broker why the previous tenant left. If the answer is, they bought a house or they relocated for work, that's normal. If the answer is vague, or the broker suddenly can't remember, there's a story they're not telling.
The tenant exit interview is such an underutilized tool. I've done it twice, and both times I got information that directly affected my decision. One tenant told me the landlord took 6 weeks to fix a broken refrigerator. Another told me the building's heating system failed for 3 days every winter like clockwork.
6 weeks without a refrigerator is not an inconvenience. It's a constructive eviction.
Yet it's legal in plenty of jurisdictions because the landlord is working on it.
Let's talk about one more thing before we wrap. The neighborhood at night. You mentioned different times of day for viewings. But I'd go further. If you're serious about a place, spend an evening in the neighborhood. Get dinner nearby. Walk around at 9 p.m., at 11 p.m. See what the street feels like when it's dark. See who's around. See if the quiet residential street at noon becomes a shortcut for bar traffic at midnight.
The nighttime reconnaissance is essential. Also check the walking distance to the things you actually use. Grocery store, pharmacy, transit stop. Don't trust the listing's minutes from claims. Walk it yourself with a timer. That 5 minutes from the metro might be 12 minutes at a brisk walk, and 30 when there's ice on the ground.
The minutes from inflation and rental listings is so universal it's almost folkloric. I've seen minutes from downtown for an apartment that was a 40-minute drive without traffic.
It's aspirational geography.
It's lying, but it's the kind of lying that's hard to call out because minutes isn't falsifiable in the same way square footage is.
Speaking of square footage, how often is the listed square footage actually accurate?
Bring a laser measure if you care about exact dimensions. But more importantly, look at the layout. 1,000 square feet that's laid out well feels larger and is more functional than 1,200 square feet of awkward hallways and unusable corners. Square footage is a number. Layout is your life.
The laser measure is also useful for checking whether your furniture will fit. I've seen people sign a lease and then discover their couch won't make it through the front door.
Measure the doorways, measure the stairwells, measure the elevator. If you're moving into a walk-up, measure the turns in the staircase. There's a special kind of despair that comes from watching movers try to pivot a queen-size box spring around a landing that's 6 inches too narrow.
The Box Spring Pivot of Despair. That's the title of my memoir.
All right, I think we need to start bringing this together. Hilbert, if you had to distill this into a protocol, a field manual for the 20-minute viewing, what's the sequence?
Phase 1, pre-arrival. Research the building permits, the property manager, the broker. Arrive early, observe the neighborhood and the building's exterior condition. Phase 2, the viewing itself. Bring a decoy if you can. Run the thermal camera sweep, do the marble test, run the plumbing stress test, test the outlets, do the 60-second silence. Phase 3, the exit. Talk to a neighbor. Walk the neighborhood. Check the trash area. Phase 4, the follow-up. Schedule a second viewing at a different time and day. Read the lease like it's a hostage note. Get everything in writing.
That's a field manual. I'd add one thing. Trust your gut. If something feels wrong and you can't articulate why, your subconscious has probably picked up on something your conscious mind hasn't processed yet. Don't talk yourself into ignoring it.
The gut check is real. Every bad apartment I've ever rented, I had a moment during the viewing where something felt off, and I rationalized it away because I was tired of looking, or the location was perfect, or the rent was a deal. The deal that feels too good to be true is the one that's hiding something.
The best deal in a bad building is still a bad deal. You're going to live there for at least a year. The inconvenience of being thorough for an extra hour is nothing compared to the inconvenience of living with a problem you could have caught.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
Wait, I have to do this too?
You're on mic, you're doing the fact.
In the 1840s, a naturalist exploring the Caspian Basin documented a species of freshwater squid with tentacles measuring less than 1 millimeter in length, making it the smallest cephalopod ever recorded. It was discovered in a brackish lagoon that no longer exists.
A squid the size of an eyelash, in a lagoon that doesn't exist anymore.
A very Hilbert fact. To wrap this up, the core insight here isn't really about thermal cameras or marbles or fake LinkedIn profiles. It's about mindset. Most people walk into a rental viewing hoping the apartment will be good. The intelligence operator approach walks in trying to find out what's wrong. That shift, from hoping to investigating, changes everything.
The stakes justify the intensity. You're making a decision worth tens of thousands of dollars based on 20 minutes of access to a space someone is professionally incentivized to misrepresent. Being thorough isn't paranoid, it's rational.
Just don't be the person who pulls out a thermal camera on a first date. Very different outcomes.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for stepping out from behind the board and into the madness. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. We're back next week.
Try not to sign any leases you'll regret.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from law. Time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.